In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. We are all going to die, everyone in this room, and it doesn't matter whether it's the virus that gets you or something else, but we are all going to die. And the only question is how and when. And we have some control over that. We don't have total control. But we can live our lives in a way so that when we do die, our death matters. And it matters eternally. In the first gospel reading, we heard the Lord say, "For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it." Now, this, of course, doesn't mean that we should kill ourselves. It doesn't mean that we should go out of our way to seek death. But it does mean that we should not be overly attached to the life in this world, but be focused rather on preparing ourselves for the life in the next. And this is a paradox. It's somewhat similar to the proverb about raising children. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. What the proverb is saying is, if you love your son, that you're going to do things that on the surface don't seem to be loving. You're going to give your children a whipping when they need it. You're going to discipline them. You're going to tell them no when you would like to be able to tell them yes. You would like your children to be happy all the time. You would like to see the smiles on their face rather than the frowns or hear their cries. Also, if you act in a way that seems to be loving on the surface to your children, if you spoil them, if you give them whatever they want, if you never tell them no, you actually hate your children. The reality, of course, is the opposite of what seems to be on the surface. If you love your children, you're going to do that which doesn't seem to be loving on the surface, which your children are often not going to perceive as being loving at the time, although later on when they're older and they're wiser, they will look back and they will understand it. And if we are focused on our earthly life, preserving our biological life as our highest priority, making our life as comfortable as possible, we will ultimately lose our lives in the world to come. So what we need to do is we need to view our spiritual life somewhat as we would a child. We need to discipline that child. We need to do the things that don't make ourselves comfortable, that don't make our life easy, because we want the best for our souls. We want to save our life for the next, not to make our life easy in this life. When we have things too good, it's easy for us to lose sight of the life of the world to come. On the other hand, when things are hard in this life, it's far easier for us to focus on saving our souls. And this is one of the reasons why we fast, why we have ascetic discipline in the church. We do this voluntarily to make things more difficult for ourselves because we want to keep our focus on God. When we fail to do this, God often brings hardships into our lives to wake us up. And when a nation does this, God often brings calamities upon that nation. Whereas a nation that is able to discipline itself and keep its eyes on God is often blessed by God with prosperity. Now, this is not infallibly the case. There have been many times in church history and biblical history where you had godly rulers and people who, a nation that was at least for a large part living for God, and then they suffered some difficulty, but God got them through that, and often that was used as a means of demonstrating God's providence to those people and strengthening their faith. It's easy for us to focus on God when things are hard, and it's hard for us to focus on God when things are easy. That's what we have to keep in mind. The 40 martyrs are an example of men who had their focus on God, and they're examples for us to follow. And I've talked about the 40 martyrs in greater detail before, so I'm going to just summarize them, but you should all be familiar with their lives. This is one of the lives of the saints that I actually knew before I knew just about anything about Orthodoxy, because it's a very well-known story. But in the year 313, St. Constantine the Great and the co-emperor at that time, Licinius, issued the Edict of Milan, which allowed for religious toleration. No longer would Christians be persecuted. And also, by that time, St. Constantine had already allowed Christians freedom where he was ruling, but Licinius had not. And so in this case, there was religious freedom allowed for everybody, even for pagans. However, Licinius later reneged on this agreement when he decided that he wanted to fight for control of the whole empire. And since St. Constantine was seen as the one that favored the Christians, Licinius was concerned about Christians in his army, and so he sought to remove them by forcing all of his soldiers to offer sacrifices to idols and thereby smoke out the Christians. And in what was known as the Thundering Legion, which was at that time in sort of central Turkey, there were 40 Christian soldiers who identified themselves as such and refused to offer sacrifices to the idols. They were promised rewards, then they were threatened with all kinds of punishment. Neither of these things worked, and then they were imprisoned. And during that imprisonment, we're told in their life that they sang psalms, and that the Lord strengthened them and promised them that he would get them through this. Later, when they were given the choice of going out onto a frozen lake naked to freeze to death, they all willingly took their clothes off and they went out onto that lake. In the middle of the night, one of these soldiers gave in. They had the lake ringed with soldiers who were to guard to make sure that none of these martyrs escaped, and they also had a bath that they had constructed on the shore with a nice warm bath waiting for whoever wanted to come out of the cold so that they could become warm yet again. One of the 40 of the number finally gave in. He broke and he made his way towards that bath, but no sooner had he crossed the threshold of that bath, he collapsed and he died. Later that night, one of the guards saw 39 crowns descending on the martyrs. And when we think of crowns, we're thinking of a crown like a king, but what you need to understand is we're talking about a laurel wreath, the crown of victory, that an athlete would be awarded when they won at the Olympic Games. And he saw those 39 crowns descending from heaven, and he realized that the soldier who had given in had lost his crown. And he decided that he wanted that crown. So he threw off his clothes, announced to the guards that their God was his God, and he joined them. The Lord warmed them through the night. But in the morning, the emperor ordered that they be taken to the shore and that their legs be broken with sledgehammers. And all but one of them died. They got carts, they put them on them, but they left the one that was still living. And his mother, who was there and watching all these things happen, picked him up and put him on the cart so that he wouldn't lose his crown, so that he wouldn't lose faith. And he gave up his soul to the Lord at that point. There are several lessons that we can learn from the lives of the 40 martyrs. One is that they strengthened themselves by psalms, and they could only have done this if they had memorized these psalms ahead of time, because it's not like the prison guard would have allowed them to take in little Bibles with them when they were in prison. At that point, they either had to have it with them or they weren't going to have it. When a crisis hits you, it's too late to prepare for it, and we're finding that out right now. If you kept a low supply of toilet paper right now, you're regretting that. If you didn't have a lot of hand sanitizer in your house, you're regretting that. When a hurricane's coming through, if you have trees in your yard that you thought, well, I probably ought to have those trees trimmed so that they don't fall down on my house when the wind gets really high and a hurricane's coming through, it's too late to call the tree trimmer when the hurricane's about to hit, because everybody's calling the tree trimmer at that point and they want to get their trees trimmed and he can only trim so many trees. You've got to prepare now. You've got to make the preparations ahead of time. And what you need to be asking yourself now is what's in your spiritual pantry that you're going to be able to take with you when a crisis comes. It's quite possible that the present circumstances that we're experiencing are a way to warn us Christians and to wake us up that the day may soon be upon us when we're not going to have the luxury of being able to go to church and worshiping with our fellow believers and receiving the sacraments. I got a message from Bishop George, who's in Australia, just this morning, and their government has issued an order that closed all houses of worship, but in the same order said the schools are still going to stay open. So they're still going to have their kids going to school, but houses of worship are closed. And right now, we have many government authorities in the United States that are basically sending the message that going to church is a non-essential activity. Going to Walmart, being surrounded by mobs of people trying to fight you for the toilet paper, that's essential. Going to the gas station, that's essential. Going to the bank, that's essential. Flying on a plane where you're far more likely to get a virus because you're breathing the same air as everybody else for a couple of hours, that's essential. But worshiping is not essential. Well, the message is being conveyed to our children that it's not essential. If we allow them to believe that, there's a fair chance that they're going to grow up and believe that and act accordingly. So we should not act that way. We should not allow that message to be communicated in our families. But the thing is, we do need to be prepared, because the day may come when they just decide, you know what, these houses of worship are not essential activities, period. We're just going to close them. This is what happened to the Soviet Union. This is what happened in communist China. This is what's happened many times in church history. And if you're not prepared, if you don't have the scriptures in your heart, if you don't know how to pray the services, if you don't know how to sing any psalms, then you might find yourself in a very bad condition, because you're only going to have with you what you prepared. One other lesson from the martyrs that we need to learn is that one soldier who gave in and sought the comforts that were waiting for him on the beach didn't receive satisfaction. And if we're looking for satisfaction in this life and we're not finding it in God, it's a mirage. It's not really going to satisfy our needs and our wants. If we give ourselves over to that and sacrifice our relationship with God, we're going to not only lose out in the next life, but we're not really going to be happy in this life. Also, we need to keep our eyes on the prize, to quote from an old song. We need to be focused on what's most important. There's a crown of victory that's awaiting each and every one of us. If we place the comforts and the joys of this life as our highest priorities, then our only reward will be those things in this life, and then maybe only for a short time, because they're really not going to satisfy, and these things are fleeting even by the measure of a human lifetime. But if we want to save our lives eternally, we have to be prepared to cast off this life, just as the 40 martyrs cast off their clothes, walked out onto the lake, and then cast off their lives for Christ's sake. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. Amen.